Welcome to Nonprofit Expert, presented by Donor Perfect.
Hello, and welcome to Nonprofit Expert, presented by Donor Perfect. My name is Julia Gockenbach, and I'm so excited we have Amy Eisenstein with us today. Amy, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Amy Eisenstein is the CEO and co-founder of Capital Campaign Pro. Capital Campaign Pro provides a modern approach to campaign consulting and empowers nonprofit staff and volunteers to lead successful campaigns. Amy's published books, including Major Gift Fundraising for Small Shops and 50 Asks in 50 Weeks. She became a certified fundraising executive in 2004 and received the ACFRE in 2013. Amy currently serves on the board of her local community foundation and the ACFRE board. Check out Amy's weekly podcast, all about capital campaigns, on your favorite podcasting app. And for more information and resources, you can check out capitalcampaignpro.com. Amy, it's so great to have you here. I can't wait to dig into these capital campaigns. I actually have never run a capital campaign, so I'm going to learn a lot from you today, and I'm really looking forward to that. But before we get into all of that, I want to hear a little bit about your path to nonprofits. How have you found yourself in the fundraising world? How are we chatting today? What got you here?
Well, thank you so much for having me, Julia. I think, like so many people, I sort of fell into fundraising, but kind of not. I always knew that I wanted to help people. I knew I wanted to be in the nonprofit sector. In college, I did a lot of volunteering, and I actually went to graduate school for a master's in nonprofit administration. So I knew that I wanted to be in fundraising, and I took my first, or nonprofits, I should say, I took my first fundraising job at a domestic violence shelter. And I sort of thought about it like graduate school, sort of something I had to do in order to be effective in nonprofits. And what I found was that fundraising, in my opinion, is what makes the nonprofit world go round. And so I just fell in love with fundraising and this idea that you could find donors who are really passionate about important causes and match them up and really be effective. So I was development director for more than a decade at three organizations, really on the ground fundraising. And then I now have been consulting for more than 15 years, and I'm excited to be here.
That's great. Well, we can't wait to learn from all of your experience and knowledge. And as you mentioned, you were in fundraising, but now you're really focused on capital campaigns. And so I'd love to dig into what that looks like and, you know, what it even means. So why don't we start with the basics? For those who are unfamiliar with a capital campaign, can you explain what it is and why it's so important for nonprofit growth? And I think for me, sometimes I think of capital campaigns and major giving as the same thing. Is it different? How does this all fall into overall fundraising?
Yeah, such good questions. Well, the first 10 years of my consulting, I really focused on helping organizations raise major gifts because those are the biggest gifts, right, that an organization gets, usually from an individual or a couple, and often for a specific project or for a specific effort. And I just think that they are so impactful for organizations. Often organizations raise major gifts as part of their annual fund. It's part of their recurring revenue, and it's part of what makes the organization go round. A capital campaign sort of is different because it is a once in a while major fundraising effort for a very specific project or to build the capacity of the organization that catapults the organization to the next level of service. So multi-year, bigger than, more fundraising than the organization has ever done for a very specific project or program or series of project and programs, often around a building project, but not always. But it's for long-term needs. So it really gets the organization to the next level of operations, of programs, of services. It really gives them a huge boost. The community, the organization, should look different after a campaign than when they started. It's not just day-to-day business as usual, but it's like, okay, what's next? What's the leap in growth? That's what a capital campaign or a capacity campaign or even a comprehensive campaign, that's what they're all about. And it's multi-year.
Interesting. That I feel like I already understand it so much better. Thank you for explaining that to me, because it is so easy to think, oh, a capital campaign is full of large gifts a lot of the time. But do you see successes for capital campaigns from all types of givers, or is it mostly major givers?
So campaigns begin with the biggest gifts at the top of your gift range chart or your gift pyramid. So capital campaigns should start with lead and major gifts, the biggest gifts to the campaign. In fact, the lead gift is often 25% of the campaign goal. So if someone's doing a campaign for $10 million, the lead gift might very well be $2.5 million. And then you go down from there. So you start in a quiet phase of a capital campaign where you're talking to the major donors, the lead givers, and the major gift donors. And then when you get to 75, 85, or even 90% of your goal, you will go public with your campaign and invite the rest of the community to give. And that's when you see things like crowdsourcing or direct mail and email solicitation, social media, those types of things. And everybody's invited to participate. But the first 85% of your campaign is major gift and individual solicitations.
That's so cool. I hadn't even realized that breakdown of percentages. So it's definitely everyone can play, but it comes in phases, which is cool. What are some key indicators that maybe a nonprofit is ready to launch a campaign? How do they prepare for something like that? You know, you don't just wake up one morning and say, okay, maybe we'll launch a capital campaign today.
Yeah, and that's so true. And there are lots of reasons that an organization might start talking about a campaign. But what is really critical is that an organization have very specific objectives and a big vision. Now, often a campaign, an idea for a campaign starts with a strategic planning process, which hopefully organizations go through every couple of years. And so a campaign may be born out of a strategic planning process. The organization's ready for something big. Also, campaigns come because organizations run out of space or have a waiting list. So they may need a bigger building, or they may need to be able to serve more people, or they come up with an innovative program or process where they can serve the community more effectively. So a big idea, a big vision. And so that is often what ignites the idea for a capital campaign. I actually think that organizations should seriously consider a big campaign every decade or so. You know, every 10 years, what's the next move to be more effective, to get closer to your mission? What can you do that would propel you to the next level of service? So whether it comes up organically through a strategic planning process or the need for a bigger building or to help your waiting list, you should be purposeful and do some blue sky visioning and planning for your next campaign.
And what I mentioned, I've never done a capital campaign before. So what would that even look like? How do you start it? Like what would a typical campaign look like?
Right. Well, let's say that your organization has been talking about this, has a big idea, has a big vision. You know what you want to do. Then I guess, is that what you're asking? What are the next steps? Mm-hmm. What would come next?
Yes.
Yeah. So once you've done a little bit of project planning, like you have some sense of what you want to do, if it surrounds a building, right? What are your space needs? Look at facilities. Will you be buying property? Will you be renovating your existing facility? There are all sorts of facilities and project questions to ask and start thinking about what that might cost, what it would look like to implement. Whether you have a building or not, you know, what is the expansion scope of your projects or services and what does that entail? And once you have some handle on that, it's probably a good time to start talking to some campaign experts or campaign consultants. to find out from people who do this day in and day out, what's the next step for you? What should you be thinking about? What kind of support would your organization need? What kind of expertise and staffing do you have in-house? And what kind of expertise will you need externally? But the truth is that most organizations should be doing a feasibility study, which is an opportunity to talk to your lead potential donors about your vision and your case and your plans and your working goal, and get some early feedback before officially launching a campaign so that you get off on the right foot.
Yeah, that's helpful. We definitely want to get off on the right foot for sure. What are some maybe challenges that someone might come up against when they first start a capital campaign, or even throughout the series of a capital campaign? Do you have any strategies for how to effectively overcome these common challenges?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges that I often see organizations have, or maybe a mistake that they make, is not taking the time to plan. A capital campaign usually is a fundraising effort that is 5 times, 10 times, 20 times your normal annual fundraising. So it is significantly more than you are used to raising as an organization. And so the mistake that I see is, one, thinking that you can do it in-house with existing staff and resources, no additional expertise or input. And it's a big mistake. How would you expect your current existing development team to go from raising $1 million a year to $10 million without any additional expertise, planning, resources? So to me, it's about not taking the time to plan, not taking the time to tap into expertise that exists, and looking at effective campaign strategy. So organizations that are sort of scrappy or want to do it themselves, say, we're just going to proceed. And then what happens is that they get stuck. And they, you know, honestly, the first few million are pretty easy. It's the last few million that are hard or harder. And if you haven't planned well, and you may not actually know ultimately what you can raise without proper planning or doing a feasibility study. So you may get to 50% of your goal and either get stuck because you didn't execute well, or you've gotten to the top of your fundraising, but you don't know it. So I would say slow down, take the time to plan, reach out to resources that are available. You can interview 3 or 4 campaign consultants and learn a lot without committing anything. Just see what they have to offer. See what you can learn. And I hope people will reach out to Capital Campaign Pro. We have a ton of both free and paid resources on our website. And we'd love to talk to any of your listeners about a campaign and see how we might help or what we can teach them.
That's a great idea. I think as fundraisers, we, whether we're at a small shop or a big shop, we are pretty scrappy. I think there are many things that come across our desk that make us a little bit of MacGyvers, I guess you could say.
Yes.
And so I could see a lot of us saying, okay, we're doing a capital campaign, here we go, and not thinking to pause and consider some unique resources. So that's a great point. You mentioned, I think this is something that I would fear, is you mentioned getting 50% through your capital campaign. What if you got 50% through and just got stuck? What would be a next step, or what happens if you don't hit your goal? How would someone work through that?
Well, I would say take preventative measures to ensure that that doesn't happen in the first place. And that would be working with expertise. You know, capital campaign consultants, good experienced ones, have done this dozens or hundreds of times. And so they can help you plan to make sure that that doesn't happen, and to strategize perhaps when it does. And so starting out correctly is always easier than helping an organization that comes to us halfway through and they're stuck. Then, you know, we can point to lots and lots of things that went wrong potentially along the way, You know, often I'll give you an example. A board member's super excited to start the fundraising and they say, well, forget the plan. Let's just go out and start asking. We need to do this anyways. So it doesn't matter. We don't need to do a feasibility study. I hear this all the time. Forget the feasibility study. We need a new building. Our building's falling, you know, the roof's falling in. We just need to do this. So I'm going to go start asking. And the board member, who's really well-intentioned and very eager, and I love this, they go ask their friend for $10,000. But if they had taken the time to look at campaign strategy, think through their donor base, do some research, they would have realized that that potential donor was a $100,000 donor, not a $10,000 donor. And so if you underask many of your lead donors, you will never get to your goal. And so board members who don't have experience or expertise will do that. Even development directors who, you know, maybe they haven't had lots of campaign or maybe any campaign experience either. So it always seems easier to ask someone for a gift that they're going to say yes to than thinking about a stretch gift. But then you will come up short. So we do have strategies to help people go back to donors and to sort of then you take 10 steps back. But sometimes you can't get to your goal. Some and then it's better to know that in advance and plan for alternative funding sources. There's sometimes government allocations, there's sometimes government grants, there sometimes organizations need to think about financing for a project, and that's not always a bad idea. That can be part of the funding mix. Sometimes philanthropy doesn't pay for the whole project. For example, if a hospital's building a new wing, the project may be $100 million, and the hospital has some reserves, they have fee for service, they take out financing, there's government money, and philanthropy maybe covers $20 million out of the $100 million. So just because your project costs something, you have to know what role philanthropy is going to play in that project. Now, for some organizations, philanthropy has to cover the whole thing. But moving ahead before you know that doesn't help you plan, right? Sometimes you have to scale the project back. You can't build your dream project. You build the next best project. And you're still doing amazing. You still have an amazing project, even if it's not sort of your top dream project. So planning, preparation, research, strategy, execution will get you an amazing project and help you raise more money than you ever dreamed possible. That's the goal.
That is so cool. And I love what you said about the different ways to raise money. It's not always philanthropy. It could be grants. It could be other ways. So that's a unique approach and something that I would not have known unless talking to someone who knows a lot about capital campaigns. So I appreciate that advice. What something else that you mentioned just now about board members. So I want to dig a little bit into board members because I know for me, my board was always interested in getting these big gifts. And so a capital campaign, I think, would have really excited them. What role does the board play in something like this? And do you require funding from the board for a capital campaign? What role do they have in asking, in giving, in promoting all of those ways that they can help further your campaign?
Yeah, board members and the board as a whole have really important roles and responsibilities, as you can imagine. The board as a whole is responsible for voting to approve, to move forward with the campaign, some voting, probably initial funding to hire a consultant and do a feasibility study. And then at the end of the feasibility study, they would vote to approve the recommendations and the campaign plan and move into a campaign. So the board as a whole has some responsibilities. And then, of course, individual board members have roles and responsibilities as well. And we do want every board member making a gift to the campaign that's over and above their regular annual fund gift. Now, at what levels they decide to give, of course, is up to each individual board member, but we do hope it'll be a stretch gift, a significant gift for their own personal budget. And what we've seen recently is that, well, not just recently, we've actually seen recently because we did a research report and asked hundreds of nonprofits that had recently were in campaigns or finished campaigns how much their board contributed. And what we find is that the average organization, their board gives about 15% of the campaign goal, which to me signals that you don't need to wait until you have a wealthy or well-connected board necessarily to start a campaign. I see a lot of organizations thinking, I can't do a campaign until I have wealthier or more well-connected board members. And that's not the case. We need a board that cares, where everybody's excited about the project and willing to commit and to contribute to the campaign in the ways that they can. And we will help recruit a campaign committee made up of some non-board members that will help with some of those larger gifts and some of that lead gift fundraising to supplement some of those connections on the board.
Yes, I love that. I love hearing the ways that the board is part of it at the beginning and in the middle. Like, they are part of the approval, they are part of the actual fundraising, and then I would assume they're part of the end too. They get to be part of the, joy that comes once the capital campaign is finished.
Absolutely.
So the board seems really integrated, just like the development team or the executive director maybe.
Yeah. And there's lots of committees along the way throughout the campaign that we want board members to help participate in as well. So lots of roles for board members. Yes.
Great point. Another thing that you've mentioned briefly is the idea of this giving is beyond annual giving. And I think that a lot of development directors maybe fear launching a capital campaign because they're not sure how it will affect their annual giving. Like you said, this is above and beyond. These are stretch gifts. What advice would you have for a development director that maybe feels a little nervous about asking people for more without risking their annual budget?
Yeah, that is such an important question. One of the top questions we get is, what's going to happen to our annual fund if we do a capital campaign? And there are specific campaign strategies where we talk to every single donor we're asking for a campaign gift from, and we're talking about both the annual fund and what it does and the capital campaign, how they're different, how the capital campaign supports the organization in growth, but also the organization needs to maintain their ongoing annual operating services and programs, and how they're different pots and equally important. And so we're asking every single donor for gifts to both, and that's how the annual fund is preserved. And I think I started to allude to a research project we just did. So if your listeners are interested in the results of that research, they can find the report at capitalcampaignpro.com/research. And what it shows is that of the organizations we surveyed, nearly 80% of organizations that were in a campaign or completed a campaign were able to preserve or increase their annual fund during and after a campaign. And you have to pay attention to it. It doesn't happen by accident or magically, but if you're strategic and thoughtful and planful about how and when and who you ask, you can preserve, and even the goal is to increase your annual fund after a campaign as well.
That sounds daunting, but unique. I don't know. That's really cool to think of kind of calling out the importance of this. I think when we first started discussing capital campaigns, I thought of it as, okay, let's talk about this capital campaign thing over here, and then we'll talk about this annual fund thing over here, and we'll hope that nobody notices that we're talking about them both. But right, you're saying, let's call them out. Let's say, hey, yeah, we're expecting you to still participate in annual giving, but look, there's this other opportunity that we would love for you to participate in as well. So I think keeping them connected and not exclusive is important to break down some barriers for the giver too. I think that's great.
Yeah, I mean, I think the vast majority of people who are going to give to your campaigns already give to your annual fund, already support you in some ways. And One way to think about it is annual fund gifts often come from what we think about as checkbook giving or cash flow. It comes, you know, on your credit card. And capital campaign gifts, especially those initial gifts, large gifts, major gifts, they come from a different pool of money. They come from assets. So they're coming from stock, from retirement funds, from real estate, from other assets. And so donors think about those gifts differently, and you should talk to them about them differently as well.
That's really interesting. And then how we're talking about these donors kind of pulling from different buckets, giving to different buckets. How do you maybe maintain relationships with these people as they're doing all of these things? It seems like a lot of spinning plates. So not only for you, but for your donor, for your accounting team, all of the things are happening at once. So how do you stay focused on donor engagement and donor retention and caring for these donors and a stewardship plan, things like that?
Well, I think that's such an important point and such a good question. It comes down to communication. You know, I think sometimes development directors think, oh, with my biggest donors, if I just leave them alone or pretend they're not there, they'll just keep giving. Maybe, you know, I don't know what. But to me, it's about communicating. It's about communicating impact. It's about communicating challenges. It's about making people partners. It's about letting people know what's going on. And so I think the better and more you can communicate, the more effective your fundraising overall is going to be. And campaigns are an opportunity for organizations to build capacity, not only for their programs and services, but also for their development. And so your development systems and infrastructure and staffing should be bigger and better and stronger at the end of a campaign and after a campaign than when you started. A big fundraising effort like this is an opportunity to staff up, to integrate or implement some new systems and infrastructure for your fundraising. So you may add a administrative support, a database person, a communications person, depending on the size and scope of your campaign and your organization, but you should be better at it at the end than when you started.
Yeah. And that, so the growth of the team, the growth of the funds, the growth of the property, it all just seems like capital campaign equals growth.
Yes.
It seems, again, kind of daunting, but so exciting to think on the other side of what this could produce.
That's exactly right.
I have a question about the communication piece. So when you're looking to build a new building, when you're communicating about that, how do you get people excited about something they can't see? How do you get them excited about a literal non-existent building or a wing of a hospital that currently the hospital doesn't have it and things seem fine? How do you get them excited about something to come like that?
Well, I think often things aren't fine, right? There's a lack of services in the community. There's a lack of a cardiac wing or a cancer wing or an after-school program or enough animal shelters or, you know, whatever you're going to build to grow. And so you talk about what the possibilities are, what isn't happening, what needs to happen, what your vision is. And often when there is a building early on, there will be initial blueprints and some early renderings and things like that. And it's not just about the building, though. When there is a building, it's what's going to happen in the building. So telling stories, communicating who it's going to help and what the impact's going to be, what difference, whether it's expanded programs and services or actually a building will make. I mean, most people don't care, hopefully, exactly what the building looks like, but what the building will enable.
Great point. And, you know, as a former fundraiser, I loved telling impact stories, and it's so exciting to share about when something we were doing was working or helping. And this sounds like an opportunity to really dream about future impact stories. Like right now, we can't do this, but after this campaign, we will be able to. And what a powerful way to get people excited. There's such opportunity. So that's really cool. I love that. It sounds like a fun exercise for a development team to dream up some things that can happen after this campaign. And maybe that's something they can do at the beginning planning stages. You've talked a lot about the importance of planning during a campaign, and maybe a fun exercise during that planning stage is what are some stories that we want to come out of this campaign? That would be so fun. I want to do that. Very
yes,
cool.
Yes.
Well, and I want to talk a little bit about the large gift aspect of this. So capital campaigns, like you said, are a lot of large gifts, and asking for large gifts can be quite daunting. And you never know if they're going to say yes or no, or laugh at you, or walk away, or be offended. What are some things that development directors or executive directors or board members can do to feel confident when they're going to ask, and to present and ask in a way that's, I don't know, urgent, expectant, things like that?
Yeah. So I think that all of capital campaign strategy is designed around engaging donors, right? From the earliest planning stages, there are strategies to engage some of these key potential lead donors in pre-campaign planning, in feasibility study interviews, in engaging them all along the way. At Capital Campaign Pro, we really focus on who are the biggest potential donors and how can we get their early buy-in into the project and the process so that they are more likely to give when it's time to solicit them. And I think one of the beautiful things to come out of campaigns for development directors who don't have experience asking for 6 and 7 and even 8-figure gifts is that good capital campaign consultants provide a ton of planning, a ton of preparation, a ton of training, role plays, so and help you craft the ask and think through strategies and how it will go and prepare you for those. So you're not just making it up as you go, not hoping, but there's real strategy behind it. And you've taken the time to really engage those donors all along the way so that when the ask finally comes, it's like almost a no-brainer. They know all along. They've seen the gift range chart. They know their role. They're excited about the project. They want to be there. You know, does every ask go as perfectly smoothly as all of that? No, but by the time you get to the ask, the donor should not be surprised. They should not fall out of their chair. They should not be offended. And you should have a relationship with them so that you are having a conversation just like we are now.
Well, and that's, I think, the most important part of all of fundraising is it can't be transactional. It has to be relational. And I'm sure that that's even more important when you're thinking of capital campaigns because they are such large gifts and it is going to result in something physical or, you know, large. So being able to build a relationship with people while you're asking is really important. That's a great point. What are some trends that maybe you're seeing when it comes to giving right now, whether specifically toward capital campaigns or major gifts or just in general? What are some trends that you're seeing when it comes to givers?
Well, I would say that what I hear most frequently from nonprofits is that they're worried about starting a capital campaign, whether they're worried about the economy or a pandemic or natural mm-hmm. disasters or a presidential campaign or a new administration. And what we've seen time and time and time again over the decades is that donors rise to the occasion. If you have a compelling case for support, and that's key, right? So I'm not talking about you just want to raise more money, or you have an anniversary, a milestone anniversary coming up, or you want to pay off debt. I mean, those aren't compelling. Those aren't exciting. That's not visionary. But if you have a strong case for support for your campaign and a big vision, and you match up with the right donors, they're going to get behind you. They're going to fund it. So to me, I don't know if this is a trend, but campaigns are successful in good and bad economies. When there's a pandemic, when, you know, donors rise to the occasion. And I guess one of the trends and the big changes in the field that I've seen recently is we're doing something we call a guided feasibility study. So in a typical, traditional, sort of old-fashioned feasibility study, a consultant gets hired to interview your donors and often confidentially and anonymously aggregate the data and make recommendations to the board. But in the new model, the way we do it at Capital Campaign Pro, we're training the leaders of the nonprofits to have those strategic conversations with donors prior to their campaign as part of the feasibility study process. So we walk them step by step and coach them every step of the way. And they're in the rooms building the relationships with donors. And this is a huge change in our sector and the field. And for so many reasons, is more effective in preparing both staff members, board members, and donors for the ask and for the campaign. And we've just seen the most incredible results doing the feasibility study in a different way, where we're still with the organization every step of the way, helping them design their case and helping them prepare for the interviews, helping them identify who should be interviewed, role-playing with them prior to the interviews and figuring out what data they need to collect and analyzing that data. So there's still a really important role that we play. And the big difference is that the donors and the development directors or the executive directors or even board members are in the room getting to know one another and building relationships prior to that campaign. And it's been totally magical.
Yeah, that's really valuable insight and really hopeful. I think that's all good news and we should feel good about where this is heading, which is really nice. Well, one more question for you. You've had an incredible career and have raised tons of money and helped organizations really make a difference. What are some big lessons that you maybe learned through the way that we could glean from?
Yeah, so I think there's so many interesting things happening in fundraising right now. One, of course, is the use of technology and AI. Mm-hmm. You know, we could do a whole separate podcast and have a whole separate conversation about that. But in terms of donor analytics and research and helping with the writing process, you know, there are AI tools in abundance, I'll just say. And picking and choosing the right ones, is probably the biggest challenge and opportunity for development directors and organizations. But campaigns are implementing aspects of AI. Now, that doesn't take the place of relationships. The human relationship is key here. But in terms of some of the behind the scenes work, I would say that AI is totally invaluable. You know, the other thing that I think has been a real sea change for organizations sort of through the pandemic and even recently in terms of technology is being able to work with consultants and donors and vendors over Zoom. Look at what we're doing right now, right? You don't have to be in the same room necessarily with your consultant or your committee or your donors to communicate and work together effectively and efficiently. And I think that's been really also sort of a game changer for fundraisers.
Yeah, very cool. Well, this is so helpful, Amy. I really appreciate you spending time with us and letting us see a little bit behind the curtain when it comes to capital campaigns. And hopefully some of our listeners have been inspired into taking that big step toward a future that isn't built yet, literally. So I appreciate you being here today, and this has been great. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Nonprofit Expert, presented by DonorPerfect. For more information and a special offer, visit DonorPerfect.com/podcast.